Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Israel's assault on the people of Gaza continues unabated. And why wouldn't it? Israel has been given a blank check by the West to unilaterally and not be bound by any constraints to proceed as it wishes. A second Nakba is being carried out, again against the Palestinians. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And here in Moscow, we have Dmitry Babich. He's a political analyst and editor at InnoSmi Internet Media Project. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's start out in Budapest. George, a lot of people have commented that the recent eruption of violence in Israel, Palestine, it's 50 years ago was Yom Kippur. We can talk about that separately, but right after Yom Kippur happened, there was that famous Kissinger shuttle diplomacy. Remember that? And dealing also as a partner with the Soviet Union behind closed doors is to contain the conflict. 50 years later, we have Anthony Blinken flying all over the place, but he's not doing shuttle diplomacy. He's trying to continue giving Israel a blank check to do whatever it wants to do, and essentially is a second Nakba to push the Palestinians still again out of Palestine. Thoughts?
Well, it's exactly right, Peter. It's very interesting you mentioned the Kissingerian shuttle diplomacy, because prior to the Yom Kippur War, Anwar Sadat had given every indication that he was ready to sign a peace treaty. From 1971, 1972, he kept making speech after speech saying he's ready to sign a peace treaty. And Israel then, as now, said, well, we don't have a negotiating partner. No, we can't talk to anyone. We can't, no, there's no problem. And then of course, when he finally, in frustration, launched Yom Kippur War, then the Americans kind of woke up and realized that Sadat was interested in making peace. And we're exactly the same position now. You know, Benjamin Netanyahu, I think 22nd of September, he went before the UN General Assembly and he showed that map of the new Middle East. In that map of the new Middle East, there was no Palestine. But the territories of the West Bank and Gaza were presented as Israel. So this is a total violation of the Oslo Accords, of innumerable UN Security Council resolution, ostensibly U.S. foreign policy, because U.S. foreign policy still says that there has to be a two-state solution. That's officially the official position in Washington. Netanyahu just went in, insolently, arrogantly presented the world. Well, this is the future of the Middle East, and we don't really care what you critics might say, because we now have peace with Arab states. And we're on the brink of signing an agreement with Saudi Arabia. So it doesn't matter. Once Saudi Arabia is on board, who cares about the Palestinians? Well, when you have that attitude, well, bad things happen. You know, frustrations explode.
Yeah, so you have what's called, what in reality was a prison break, everyone. That's how we should be looking at this here. Dima, also we have, I think, on a grossly dishonest level, there are these the talk about opening up a humanitarian corridor. Well, if we dissect that and put it into context, maybe some through the Rafah gate, you know, dual citizens, Americans, Europeans, who, if they have dual citizenship, maybe they can get out. But it's not for the Palestinians themselves. And if it were, it's a one-way ticket, again, and more ethnic cleansing of a Palestinian territory. Dima.
I think you are right. The good thing is that in Russia, we now have a tradition of evacuating our citizens. You know, during the war in Lebanon, 2006, Russia evacuated its citizens. It was a huge achievement. And I hope the same will be done with Gaza. There are not many Russian citizens there, but there are some. But I absolutely agree with you on the one-sided character of U.S. Foreign policy in the region. And unfortunately, this is the continuation of the same trend that we have seen in Ukraine, with Ukraine, with Russia, with lots of other countries. I mean, the United States lost the ability to work diplomatically, because diplomacy is about, okay, if not being impartial, then pretending to be impartial, you know? I'm reading the Jordanian newspaper As-Sabil right now, and they're dismayed by the fact that Blinken actually took part in the sitting of the Israeli cabinet. I mean, how can you be impartial if, you know, in Israel, they call it a war cabinet, you know, that's a special meeting for in the times of war. So when Blinken comes there and he says, we have total solidarity with you, that's the end of diplomacy. And I'm afraid here we have that instinct which worked, we have seen working in Ukraine. The United States lost the ability to be above the fray, you know. There is always that attitude, like we have to side with the good.
I mean, Dima, you do remember very quickly after the coup in 2014 when Joe Biden, then vice president, he sat at the head of the table of the Ukrainian government. You remember that, George? I mean, you know, as a viceroy. OK, so that's exactly what it was. But I mean, again, George, let me go back to George in Budapest here. I'm glad Dima just put it flat out. There's no diplomatic initiative whatsoever here. As a matter of fact, what Blinken wants to do is to try to keep the so-called Abraham Accords together and, you know, just basically pleading, just, you know, let this Palestinian issue just play itself out, okay? Which, of course, is untenable for tens of millions of Arabs and Muslims all across the region. There may be governments that easily will sell out the Palestinians. We've seen that over and over and over again. But as a popular issue, it's very difficult for these governments to be indifferent.
Exactly. And it's very interesting, again, going back to Kissinger, because Kissinger instituted the practice of essentially United States taking a one-sided position. Because if you were just, again, going back to the Nixon administration, you had the William Rogers, who was the U.S. Secretary of State. He put forward a reasonable peace plan, which is land for peace. You know, Israel withdraws from the territories it had occupied. In return, it will make peace with the neighboring Arab states. Kissinger pushed that aside, part of his great ploy of grabbing all power for himself, and essentially made the United States a party to what Israel was seeking to do. And ever since then, essentially, the United States has pushed aside anybody else who may have influence and who could act as a disinterested broker for peace talks. And so, the final culmination was the Oslo Accords, in which the United States supposedly was a disinterested broker. But obviously, the United States is in bed with Israel. And so, the Palestinians didn't really get very much out of it. And so that whole two-state solution was rendered null and void almost immediately when Israel thought, hey, well, this is just simply blank check for us to go on building settlements and essentially ensuring that there will be no Palestinian state.
Yeah, Dima, it seems to me that they want an Oslo 2.0, except for now it's for the Gaza Strip. So they want a faction like Fatah to be able be employed by the Israeli state to be prison guards. Okay, because that's not going to change. If the Palestinians do not leave, which I don't think they will, nor do they, to what? To where? Okay, I mean, they have no idea what, even if the Rafah gate was open, what does that mean? I mean, the cyanide is not the most pleasant place to set down stakes. Okay, but the Palestinians will stay, and it will still be an open prison. Okay, so I do not see what the end game here is, except for, God forbid, ethnic cleansing genocide. Dima.
Well, first, I would like to say that the fact that we criticize the U.S. policy and Israel doesn't mean that we in any way condone, the cruel actions which Hamas did. Attack was terrible. And of course, it's impossible to justify it. But that's the job of politicians, to look at the situation as it is and try not to make it worse, You can be impressed by the violence. You can feel compassion, but you must always have a cool head. What will be the consequences of what Israel is doing right now in Gaza? With the help of the United States, Hamas horrible as it was towards the Israelis, played a very important role in the social organization of society there in Palestine. If you destroy the infrastructure, if you destroy all the leaders, what are you going to replace it with? You know, Netanyahu doesn't care. And this is, again, the problem. You know, Netanyahu doesn't care because he wants to appeal to his electorate in Israel. In the United States, of course, the pro-Israeli lobby, the pro-Israeli part of the electorate is much more important than any other lobby, okay? But that makes it that dead end, you know, because in the United States, the government is playing up to its electorate, you know, Netanyahu is playing up to his electorate. And what is going to happen with the people, you know, in Gaza? What's going to happen to the people in on the West Bank? And you're right to recall the Oslo agreements in 1993. And let me remind you, what was the consequence of these agreements? There was an upsurge in violence. And then there was the catastrophe, the disaster of the year 2000, when Ariel Sharon basically provoked a new upsurge in violence. So the problem is with the authors here. You know, the problem is with the team which is supposed, you know, to settle the matter. If we look at Blinken and his diplomacy, if we look at the cabal around Joe Biden, what did they do? You know, they spoiled the relations with Israel. They destroyed the relations. Sorry, not with Israel, with China. They spoiled the relations with China. They destroyed the relations with Russia. They basically led to the first major war in Eastern Europe, you know, by their policies, by their one-sided support for just one party. And now they're destroying the Middle East. And I'm afraid they're going to destroy America's relations with Arab countries. Because if a real disaster happens, even United Arab Emirates, even Saudi Arabia, rich as they are, willing as they are, to have a normal relationship with everyone, including Israel, they will have to react. And they will have to go against the United States, of course, you know. There's simply no other way.
As we're all convening right here, we have to point out to everyone that a second aircraft carrier group is going off the coast of Israel. I have 20 seconds, George, before we go to the break. Just a quick comment from you, and I'll get back to you after the break. Go ahead.
Well, exactly. The point about the other Arab states is very important because if Netanyahu does indeed launch this onslaught, it will be very bloody and the Arab street will explode. Now, most of the time, the Arab rulers ignore the Arab street, but they can't always. And if the Arab street
hold that thought. We have to go to a hard break. And after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on Palestine state with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. This is the Home Edition. To remind you, we're discussing some real news. Okay, let's go back to Budapest. Before we went to the break, George, we were talking about, well, in so many words, the expansion of the conflict. We know that Hamas, when its incursion over a week ago, used mopeds, bicycles, and parachutes, and the United States has sent two nuclear-powered aircraft groups. So they're not eyeing Hamas as much as they're eyeing Iran, Hezbollah, Yemen, Syria. George.
Yes, obviously. But the thing is that if Netanyahu does indeed go in and there's an explosion in Gaza, well, not only will the Arab street explode and that will pressure other governments to do something. Clearly, there's the issue of Hezbollah. Hezbollah is very powerful, and therefore Israel may soon be facing a two-front war. But there's another aspect to it. I mean, if you look at Europe, Europe now has a very substantial Muslim population.
Right.
Very, very substantial. This wasn't true in 67, 73. Now, they feel very emotional about this. And you know, governments in the UK and France and Germany, you know, they want to adopt laws banning pro-Palestinian demonstration, pro-Hamas. No, you can't wave Palestinian flags. But they're not going to succeed because people feel so emotional about this. This isn't in the way of Russia and Ukraine, but Russia and Ukraine was an elite war. The public really didn't care very much. They didn't really have a dog in the fight. This is something very different.
Yeah. George, just to kind of point out is that I looked at some of the demonstrations all through Europe, Rome, Munich, Berlin, Paris, London. I never saw those kind of demonstrations for Ukraine. Did you?
No, not at all. Not at all. And that's the thing, that people are very emotional. So, yes, you got in the United States, people are emotional on the side of Israel. But then in Europe, people are very emotional on the side of the Palestinians. And if there are more of these scenes of horror and children getting killed and so on, then there will be violence. I mean, there will just be an explosion of violence. I mean, there'll be, terrorism that's going to make 2015, look just, like a tea party. So Netanyahu really has to take all this into serious consideration. I mean, it could well be an explosion throughout the Middle East, but there could just be an explosion throughout Europe. We haven't seen violence like this on the continent in decades.
Dima, and the media coverage of this is just it's just so deplorable. Most of the Western coverage, and they like to pass off the myth that Israel just doesn't have a choice. Just doesn't have a choice. It has to do this. Okay, that is so disingenuous. There have always been choices ever since the start of this conflict 70 years ago. There are numerous times where compromises could be made in good faith. And then George has already mentioned Oslo, which was a plan of very much bad faith. And this is what we get today. But, Israel can stop what it's doing. It can start recognizing international law. It can stop committing war crimes. And it could actually ask outside powers not the United States, but to come in and as be a broker. There are many opportunities here. And I say this in desperation as the land war against Gaza is imminent. Go ahead, Dima.
Well, you're absolutely right. But also, I think we see that what's going on in Israel, Palestine, and what's going on in Ukraine, is they're all parts of a huge conflict. Basically, people who do not understand us, when we say that Russia is leading an anti-colonial fight in Ukraine, they should look at Palestine. They should look what's going on there. Basically, most of the so-called Russian liberals who left Russia in protest against the military action in Ukraine, a lot of them went to Israel saying, I quote, "We can't live in a country that attacks its neighbors. We want to live in a country that is peaceful and doesn't attack anyone." Then they chose Israel, right? So now a lot of Russians are sarcastic, not even ironic, sarcastic about these people, including Anatoly Chubais, who now have to ponder leaving Israel because it's getting very dangerous there. But you see from this reaction of these people that actually you can't escape it. There is a real fight between the global colonial, neo-colonial powers and the backlash, And the solution suggested by the Western press is very primitive. It's like, be on the side of the West, be with Ukraine, be with Israel. But there is no end in sight because how can you be 100% with the Ukrainian government now or with the Israeli government now when what they push for is just untenable? It's impossible to get the Arabs out of Gaza and out of the territory of Palestine. It's impossible to kind of eradicate the Russian part of Ukraine, the population, the culture, the history. People who do it and people who want to do it, they behave like colonial masters who wanted to destroy all the remnants of old cultures, who wanted to create an absolutely new supposedly democratic atmosphere, right? So I think the Israeli government is not going to fulfill its plans, just like the Ukrainian government.
Well, that brings
it's
up
not going to get your Crimea back.
No. Yeah, it brings up an interesting question, George, because this is very high stakes, and the Biden administration has been, they love playing the roulette wheel, don't they? I mean, I don't know if they have any kind of inside knowledge. Obviously, they don't. But they are taking huge risks here, because when you bring two aircraft carrier groups in and presumably filled with jets being able to go out on bombing campaigns, we know where they're going to bomb. It's going to be, first and foremost, it's going to be Lebanon. But, you know, this is upping the ante. I mean, so direct American military intervention. Now, that will make everyone in the region, and I would say in the world, decide. I don't think they're going to be deciding with the side of the Washington. George.
No, exactly. You're right. I mean, I think the plan would be to start hitting targets in Lebanon. But that's going to antagonize Iran. And does the United States want to get involved in a war with Iran? Iran is a country, population of 90 million. It's got a lot of drones. It's got a lot of missiles. You know, it can basically blockade the Strait of Hormuz. Then you've got a war on your hands with Iran. You're also busy trying to, close to provoking a war with Russia. So that's two big wars that, you know, on your plate. And again, with a view to what? And neither, you know, Israel nor Ukraine has much to do with U.S. interests. So yeah. It's essentially the U.S. got stuck in within these two wars without anything that they can say that, well, this is a vital U.S. national interest. I mean, even back in the Cold War, at least they could say Vietnam, this is part of this great global struggle against communism. At least you can make that case. But how is the security of Israel in any way a matter for the United States? I mean, U.S. politicians can repeat this, but the cases are remarkably uncompelling. It's very interesting that the arguments that are made to the West Bank and Gaza, the Palestinians, say, well, you know, you just have to accept reality. I mean, that's basically it. I mean, you know, you could have a perfectly nice, happy working relationship with Israel, you know, and you can get rich, you know, we'll give you some money, shut up and just accept, you know, your lot as just the serfs to the Israelis. But in the case of Ukraine, they said, you know, they argue exact opposite, which is, you know, well, we're going to liberate Ukraine. We have to defeat Russia. They never say, well, Ukraine has to accept, you know, geography, history, and realize that they cannot win. They cannot just simply defeat Russia. It's they present this with absolutely shamelessly these hypocritical arguments, just as Ursula von der Leyen, who talked long and loud about, when you cut off water, food, electricity, that is a war crime. And then, of course, Israel. But we stand 100% behind Israel.
Well, she said that against Russia, okay? Exactly. But she's not saying that about Israel here. You know, Dima, it's very interesting what George had to say, because he's absolutely right. But what makes it, what compounds this fear that all of us should have is that there are elements in the American political elite that want to war with Iran. This is their fight. Finally, we have this opportunity to do it because we have to save Israel. Well, you know, the way, you know, given my age, I was brought up, you know, hating Iran. I was told to hate Iran, you know, because the hostage crisis, okay? That was, and so you have people like Lindsey Graham, they're looking at this as an opportunity, not as a danger. Dima.
Well, that's a very dangerous line of thought in the United States, you know, to resolve the problem. We will not resolve the problem of Palestine until Iran is defeated, right? We will not resolve the problem with Ukraine until Russia is defeated. So instead of containing the conflict, they always expand it, you know. They want more conflict. They want a total victory. I think this is one of the reasons why some experts think it was a great, the world was lucky to have Trump instead of Hillary Clinton in 2016, because we all saw that Trump wanted a war with Iran, right? Suddenly, the media, the newspapers like the New York Times and Washington Post, they went against the war against Iran. Why? Because they were afraid that Trump would win the war and that would give him another 4 years in power. Do you remember that? You know, that
that's one interpretation there. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, but I'm sure if Hillary Clinton had been in charge and there was the same.
I agree.
The war against Iran, which is all, you know, we see how everything is dependent on what happens to a few people in Washington. You know, do we have a war with Iran? You know, do the Americans have a war with Iran? Do the Americans have a war with Russia? These are all very dangerous things.
Very dangerous. George, last 30 seconds here. I think, you know, we can put a bow on it, is that violence begets violence, and wars don't really solve very much. George.
No, wars don't. And, you know, we've seen this play before. Israel has always come up with some theory that if only we crush this, you know, this particular Palestinian group now, if only we win this war, we will be able to solve all our problems. You know, we heard all of this in 1982 when they invaded Lebanon. We have to crush the PLO. The PLO is a problem. Once they're out of the way, you know, we'll be able to solve our problem in the West Bank. How many times have they tried to assassinate Arafat? If only we can get rid of Arafat, you know, all our problems will be gone.
All our problems will be solved. Gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Budapest and here in Moscow. I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RTC. And next time, remember, Crosstalk Rules.